Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Nerd Party News, the show on the Nerd Party where we talk about the news. I'm Mike.
I'm Lance.
And it is Sunday, April 18th at 1:04 p.m. Central Time. A week and what, like 4 or 5 hours, 6 hours until the Oscars. Oh boy.
Exciting. Yeah.
This is the longest awards season in history is almost over. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it sounds cool. I mean, you know, I keep hearing Soderbergh is producing, you know, Steven Soderbergh, and I keep reading these articles where they talk about how they're trying to make it like a movie. They're shooting it in widescreen and 24 frames per second.
Hashtag heist film.
You know, wouldn't that be great if they did that? Oh man, I don't know. It sounds like it's going to be pretty cool, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. So we got some news to talk about this week. But before we do, do you see anything good this week?
Yeah, I watched for the first time Under the Cherry Moon, Princess movie.
Yeah.
Because I'm playing a showcase of that this week. Yeah, like, you know, this guy wants, like, this band I'm into, like, it's like a tribute show, like it's like a Prince Day in Houston or something like that. Because it'll be the fifth year anniversary of his passing. And so there's this like Prince celebration thing going on. And so our band was tasked with playing music from that film. So I was just like, well, I should probably watch it. And it's an interesting little film. I had no idea that Kristen Scott Thomas was in it. I really like her. And I was like, oh, cool. She like seems to like pop up and stuff. And I'm just like, I like that actress. So interesting movie. Prince is a very interesting cat, probably one of my favorite artists. So I enjoyed it. I, you know, of his films though, I still gotta put Purple Rain at the top. Because it's just that's just in a class by itself. But Under the Cherry Moon, interesting.
It's kind of a sequel to Purple Rain, is that
Not, I mean, not really, but it's I would say it's like more like a spiritual sequel to it.
Okay, is he like playing like the same quote-unquote character, or
no, it just kind of has some of the same vibes and this a lot of the same vibes that are present in Purple Rain, but like it's just it takes place in a different like, you know, different part of the world, different part of, you know, like it's a different character, like the, like it's like him and Jerome from Purple Rain are like con artists, and they're trying to con this family, but he falls in love and then Jerome tries to stop them. It's like it's interesting, but like again, like it kind of follows a lot of the same beats that Purple Rain did, as far as like when the music hits, and that type of stuff.
Interesting. I've been meaning to check that out forever. It's actually the first movie that played at the theater that I used to run.
Really?
North Riverside. So
okay,
fun little fact, I guess. Whatever. I have to check that out.
Okay.
I didn't really see much this week either. The only real new movie to me that I saw was Saw 2, because I've been trying to go through and watch all the Saw movies in preparation for Spiral, because Spiral looks really cool. You know, I like the idea of it being sort of like the same universe, but a different take on the material and everything. And the fact that like Chris Rock, like, came up with this himself and everything, like that's all cool. It's just I had only seen a couple of these movies prior to this, and they're so bad, you know. And I mean, like, I rewatched the first one, and now I watch this, and I'm just like, God, I could not care less about this stuff. I really couldn't. But I'm going to try. I canceled my HBO Max subscription. It ends at April 30th. So and they're all on HBO Max. So my goal is to watch 2 through 7 or whatever it is by the end of the month. We'll see if that works.
You canceled your subscription.
Yeah, because I had a like an introductory rate where I saved like a couple bucks a month, and that was ending. And now with, you know, like Justice League out and all that stuff, I'm like, well, there's not really anything that I'm watching right now. I might as well cancel it and just start it back up when I want to watch something again.
Okay.
Who knows when that'll be. But
that's true. What are you going to do about Space Jam?
I'm going to go see it in the freaking theater like an American. I guess. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah. I canceled HBO Max, so whatever. But now the clock is ticking. I feel like I'm in one of Jigsaw's traps. It's like, you want to watch Spiral, but there is a cost. Yep. You have to watch Saw 1 through 8 first. Can you do it?
See, that
I don't
is your,
know. I honestly
don't know.
That is legit
your trap.
And it might kill me. And, you know, I don't know if it's worth it or not, but we'll see. Anyway, I did also read some more DC comics. I read the first Batgirl arc from Rebirth.
Is that Burnside?
She's in Burnside, but this particular arc, she's on vacation.
Okay.
And she's like going to like, basically she's like country hopping in Asia.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. She's going through the whole thing, but like there's this whole mystery and she gets involved in this thing. And it turns out, spoilers, I guess, that like the whole big thing is that like someone is giving like drugs to like, you know, teenagers or 20-year-old kids to make them smarter so that they can pass their college entrance exams. And I'm like, those are some interesting stakes. I don't know.
Yeah.
What, like, you know, but okay, you know, and I don't know. It wasn't tremendously well written or tremendously well drawn. Like there was like pages and pages, like just dedicated to like the food that she was eating and stuff like that. I don't know. It was an interesting thing. Then there was a follow up where on her plane ride home, Poison Ivy is also on the plane, and the turbulence causes what she thought was a fossilized plant from the Cretaceous area to come alive and start to like rip apart the plane, and now they need to like stop it.
That is wild.
That was okay, but you know, whatever. So now she'll be back. So she hasn't been in Burnside yet, but I guess that's where, you know, so now she will be in Burnside starting in the next arc. So
gotcha. You caught up on Falcon and the Winter Soldier?
Yep. I was more impressed with this week's episode than I was with last week's, I have to say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. This is the best episode of the season so far.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like, this episode is basically why they did the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, again, like, the content there and the discussions that they're having through this show, right, like, all kind of culminated in this episode, because I think the finale is just going to be, you know, it's going to be an action movie, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I appreciated the fact that they took the time to slow down and do what they did in this last episode. That kind of makes everything worth it.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Who is, spoilers for Falcon and Winter Soldier, who is Julia Louis-Dreyfus's character?
Madame Hydra.
Okay. So what does that mean?
She's likely going to be a big bad in some form or fashion down the line, because she was supposed to be in Black Widow. Like, that was something that was talked about, like, you know, a long time ago, and she was going to be in that and I guess introduced in that. But I guess because of, you know, the situation and stuff, she was introduced this way.
So you think she'll actually show up in Black Widow?
I think so. I think she's going to show up in a few things.
Mm-hmm.
Down the line, I think, you know, and, you know, she's because like Fury has a show coming out, right? That's on the slate. Well, you know, her character was, you know, a longtime partner with Fury in S.H.I.E.L.D. before she defected, slash was revealed to be a Hydra sleeper agent, you know, at the top. And, you know, I can see her being involved in the MCU moving forward in a variety of capacities.
Interesting. Well, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And also interesting to think that, I mean, since Black Widow does take place before Falcon and Winter Soldier, like, it'll be interesting to see how it plays if she does show up in that, like, is her because her reveal here was pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she does, like, introduce herself and everything, but
yeah,
like, it'll be interesting to see if she shows up in Black Widow and how that reveal occurs.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know, it's curious.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I'm certainly looking forward to the finale. I mean, maybe this is a dumb question or maybe not, but what do you think is in the box?
Oh, the Falcon Captain America suit. So made of vibranium.
It is going to be like a combo suit. Like, he'll have his wings still, but he'll be like Captain America.
Yeah, it'll be just like the Sam Wilson Captain America costume, which was basically his Falcon costume. He still had his wings, but it's in the red, white, and blue.
So he actually became Captain America in the comics.
Oh, yeah.
See, I didn't know that. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, then that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, because they rip off his wings here. And
yep. And he gives it to Torres, who becomes the new Falcon in the comics.
Oh, that's why he says keep it, huh?
Uh-huh.
Wow. All right. I missed all this stuff. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the finale. And then I'm also looking forward to the Bad Batch, which will start up.
Oh, yeah.
Afterwards. Yeah. Yeah. That'll be cool.
Cool.
All right. So, speaking of upcoming television shows, The Bachelorette is returning.
Hell yeah.
June 7th.
I'm ready.
With Katie?
Yeah.
All right.
Fan favorite Katie.
Yeah.
My girl.
Well, maybe I'll try to watch an episode and see how that goes.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I challenge you to not get hooked. And become a member of Bachelor Nation that, like, apparently I have, because apparently that's a thing now. I'm part of Bachelor Nation. I can't help it.
Well, you know, I guess it kind of sucks people in, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
I did not expect to be, but here I am excited about seeing Katie. And then after, you know, her 13-week season, I'll be ready for Michelle. And yeah, like, I'm just basically just like, I'm hooked now for life.
All right. Well, I know another show that you're probably hooked on for life is Bridgerton.
Hell yeah.
And they just announced that in addition to season 2, it will also be getting a season 3 and a season 4.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty exciting.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, well, there's, you know, there's 8 books, right? And based on the success of the first season, like, it only makes sense that they would, you know, continue. Like, season 2, that was kind of a no-brainer. But and in the next 2 seasons, it makes sense. I'm surprised that they didn't give them a fifth, because if they're going in book order, the first book was about, you know, was about Phoebe Dynevor's character and Reggae John Page's character. And, you know, part of the reason why Homeboy's not coming back is because he's not, like, a big fixture in the books moving forward. Like, he's, like, around, but he's not the focal point, because they focus on the other Bridgerton siblings. And so the second book is about the eldest brother's character. The third book, and so he's next. The third book is about the second brother. And then the third book is about the third brother and then another family's, like, daughter, Penelope, who's another favorite character. So I'm surprised that they didn't, or go ahead and give them fifth, because the fifth book is about Eloise, who is the little sister of Daphne, the first Bridgerton sibling that got married in the first book. So those are, like, the popular characters. So it makes sense that they would do it. But anyway, all that to say, I'm here for it.
Yeah, it is kind of surprising, though, because, like, Netflix is known for doing, like, 3 seasons and then just dropping shows, you know, like, they get to be too expensive. There isn't enough, you know, like, return on investment and everything.
Yeah.
So they must really like Bridgerton to give it a season 4 before season 2 has even started. So,
yeah, well, I'm telling you, man, like, it was, like, you know, that Christmas, you know, it was this past Christmas, like, it was a legit phenomenon.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody that was kind of involved in that, like, are now household names and breakout stars. I mean, yeah. Look at, I mean, especially in particular, like, you know, Reggae Jean Page. I mean, look at his career at this point. Like, he's like skyrocketing.
Yeah. Did you see that thing? That was kind of an interesting little side note in the Ray Fisher story about how Reggae Jean Page was originally, well, they wanted to cast him as Kal-El's grandfather or whatever, like the main character on that show. But
yes.
Apparently, Geoff Johns wouldn't let them.
Yeah, that's correct. I did see that. It's weird for a couple of different reasons. So, I mean, like, I get what they were wanting to do. But again, you know, Superman's grandfather looking like Reggae Jean Page, that raises a whole lot of questions for why, you know, he doesn't look like Reggae Jean Page when he gets to Kansas. And then that entire experience is different if he looks like Reggae Jean Page rather than, you know, fill in the blank of the people who've been Superman. So, like, the character changes if you do things that way. And that's the issue. It's not that, like, I'm against, you know, like, the thought behind it, because I get the thought behind it, but it's a little bit lazy in that sense that they don't think about everything that goes with it.
Well, I get what you're saying for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't watched Krypton, so maybe I'm completely off base here, but
yeah.
Like, I see this as being a unique situation in that you don't have to tell the Superman story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can send him off in his little rocket, and whatever happens to him, and he becomes Superman or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can also just kind of, like, ignore all that. You can ignore the legacy of the character, like, everything about him, and just focus on Krypton.
Yeah, but see, that's a hard thing to do, considering that Superman, that legacy and that shadow is so great, you can't ignore that legacy if you're telling that. If you're telling a story about his, you know, about the people that came before him, you automatically are thinking about how it impacts the future with the Superman that you know / think you know, right? Like, so it's too linked. They're too, the two things are too linked to each other. You can't really ignore it.
Yeah, I guess I see that. Like, it's not a prequel to any one TV show or anything like that, but it's a prequel to, like, a legacy which everyone is familiar with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And the thing with, like, Bridgerton, like, you know, they're, you know, they have, you know, basically this show where they have this, you know, very diverse cast, and they have, you know, you have Reggae Jean Page, who is a duke, right? Like, who's a part of royalty, right? But that is based in more... There's a historical precedent for that. That is because, you know, Queen Charlotte, there's, like, you know, there is, I don't want to say conspiracy or rumor, but there is basis in the fact that she was not just a, you know, some old white lady who was, you know, Queen of England. Like, right. She was at the very least a lightly melanated woman. Right. And black and brown people have been around in this in this world and have existed in more capacities than just being, you know, slaves and whatnot, right? There were black royalty, there were black and brown royalty, there were people, like, you know, black and brown people in higher positions and existing in more illustrious capacities than what is depicted in history. And so that's the good thing that Bridgerton brought out. It's like, no, this did exist. We just don't like talking about it because history is largely whitewashed.
Right.
Because of who's been in power. So that's a different capacity when people will try to make the arguments like, oh, well, he played a duke in this. It's like, well, yeah, because there were black dukes. So that's a different conversation.
Yeah. All right. Well, Bridgerton, maybe that's a show that I'll check out too eventually.
You should. It's dope.
I know. It's just, there's just not enough.
It's so much. Right. I know. There's so much.
All right. Shifting gears to the big screen. I mean, not a whole lot of news this week, but probably the biggest story is that ArcLight Cinemas is closing, which, you know, I don't know if there are any ArcLights in Texas, to be honest. We have two up here in Chicago, but the vast majority of them are in California, most notably the Cinerama Dome in Los Angeles is owned by ArcLight, and they announced that they're not reopening. Obviously, I don't understand how all this works, to be honest, but I know that there's lots of times where, like, companies will go bankrupt to get out of, like, leases that they signed, and then, like, after all that is settled, then they'll, like, structure or whatever, and yeah, then they do reopen. A new deal. Yeah. So like, and they have like theaters in like very like high rent, you know, hoity toity places, you know, like yeah. There's one in Sherman Oaks, I guess, and then there's another one in Pasadena, and you know, even the one in Chicago is in like this very fancy new kind of mall thing, right on, mm-hmm. on the north side and everything. And you know, I can see how they would be like, look, we don't want to pay this rent anymore, but for a place like the Cinerama Dome, which I'm assuming they own, although I don't know for sure. They okay. can say like, well, we're still going to open that one. We're still going to open these other ones, you know, which are places that we own or places where the rent is lower or whatever, or mm-hmm. places where they can renegotiate their deals and then, you know, come back. And even if they don't, I kind of feel like with the Cinerama Dome being the Cinerama Dome,
yeah,
if they close, someone will buy it and keep it open. That being said, I did see a documentary a couple of years ago where they were talking about like movie palaces and, you know, kind of the history and how they have closed or stayed open or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the Cinerama Dome and how significant it is and how, I don't know, like 20, 30 years ago, they were looking to sell it and turn it into a juice bar.
Ugh.
So I don't know if it's necessarily 100% safe, but I'd like to think that it is. Have you ever been to the Cinerama Dome?
I've not, unfortunately.
It's cool. It's a really weird theater because you go there and you see the outside and it's got the big honeycomb thing and you're like, this is amazing. And then you go inside and you're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. Like mm-hmm. the you can see the dome on the ceiling and everything like that. The screen, I didn't realize this. I read this today, but it's like 86 feet wide, which okay. is like as big or bigger than like the largest IMAX screens in the world. Mm. You know, like it's huge. And it's got this really deep curve to it because like Cinerama was a format back in the day that used three projectors. And it would like, I mean, that's how that they would make it so wide is with these three projectors. And, you know, some other movies have done it, like notably The Hateful Eight was shot in kind of the same aspect ratio or whatever, designed to be shown on the dome. But for most movies, like you show it on that deep curved screen and it just looks like a giant smiley face from where you're sitting, you know? Mm. I mean, like a real giant smiley face, like someone is grinning from ear to ear, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, that's not quite right. And there's like weird things where like the light is like bouncing off of each other and washing out the screen. And it's like, okay, this room is like the coolest room you've ever been in, but it might not be the best room to watch a movie in. You know what I mean? Okay. So I don't know. I went to LA in January of last year and I saw like all the theaters and Cinerama Dome was the one that I was looking forward to the most. And I have to say it was the one that I was the least impressed with because it was just, and I've been there before. Like I posted on Twitter, like the movies that I've seen at the Cinerama Dome are Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Excellent.
Shrek the Third.
Excellent.
Wall Street, Money Never Sleeps.
Oh, excellent.
And The Gentleman. And I tweeted that, and my friend Tony was like, that's a murderer's row right there.
No joke.
But, you know, that's what was playing when I was there. So, yeah. You know, what are you going to do, you know? So, I don't know. I hope that it stays around so that I can go back to LA and see something like The Hateful Eight there. I think that would be great. But we shall see.
Yeah. It does suck though that the pandemic is, it's like, you know, a result of this pandemic has been like a lot of these theaters shutting down and like these specific types of you know, movie houses shutting down, because the one here in Houston recently announced that it's going to be doing the same. And it's just like, well, dang, you know, yeah. It's just like, because, you know, I really liked, you know, the River Oaks Theater, lots of good memories and experiences there. And it just sucks that like, that's just one of the other another casualty of what's, you know, occurred in the world over this past year and change.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly been a problem up here too. I mean, you know, they just announced that Navy Pier, which has like the only real IMAX screen in Chicago, you know, 85 foot wide and everything. It's where, you know, Christopher Nolan screened his dailies when he was shooting The Dark Knight. You know, I mean, like, it's the theater in Chicago when it comes to, like, you know, big, it's the largest screen in Chicago by far. And they just announced that they're closing, you know, because, I mean, I get it. It's one theater by itself out on Navy Pier. The rent there is probably like $1 billion a month, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what can you do? But it's disappointing. But hopefully, you know, some other, if these companies do go out of business or whatever, some other, you know, companies will come around and save some of these theaters.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Speaking of saving things, there's a guy who has been trying to find the original cut of The Magnificent Ambersons for the past 25 years. Magnificent Ambersons, Orson Welles' second movie. Studio watched it. They were like, what is this? No, 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 no. And they chopped it up. They Justice Leagued it, you know, into oblivion and released it. And, you know, Orson Welles is like, oh, this is, you know, I mean, they went back and reshot things and everything. They did the same thing that they did with Justice League.
Okay. And so then, this search has been going on for 25 years. Like, why didn't they just, you know, start, you know, using the hashtags? I mean, that seems to be the strategy that works, right?
Yeah. Hashtag release the Welles cut.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be back in the day, they actually did something similar to that, like with Touch of Evil, like, a journalist from Chicago wrote like a whole thing about, you know, all the changes that were made, and Universal actually did go back and redo it. The issue this time is that back in World War II, they were like, oh, we need the silver nitrate from this film. So they melted all of the film down to get the silver nitrate out of it. So all of the footage is gone. It just doesn't exist. However, Orson Welles was shooting something in Brazil at the time that Ambersons was being edited.
Okay.
And apparently a print was shipped down to Brazil for him to watch. And basically everything went to hell somewhere in there. And some guy in like the 90s said that back in the 60s, he saw the print sitting in like a film lab. And that it might belong to some collector now. Like, they're thinking it could be in some rich guy's attic in Brazil.
Oh, wow.
And, like, putting the pieces together, there's enough evidence to suggest that this is a real thing. This could actually exist. Okay. And this filmmaker, this documentary filmmaker, has been trying to find this print for the past 25 years.
Wow.
And now, you know, obviously this is a rather expensive undertaking, but Turner Classic Movies has decided to team up with this guy and basically fund the last leg of his search. Next year is the 80th anniversary of Ambersons, so he's going down to Brazil to try to find this print, and if he does, Turner Classic Movies is going to do a Snyder cut, a Welles cut of it, and release it, you know, in its original, never before seen form.
Wow,
I mean, it is super cool.
That is cool. You know what? You know, ready the armada, ready the hashtags. Let's help this dude as much as he can, because, you know, Snyder set the precedent of getting stuff like this happening. So let's do it. This is his legacy. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, have you seen Magnificent Ambersons?
No.
It's not very good, but Welles says that the original cut was better than Citizen Kane. So that
they all say the original one was better.
Yes, they do. So we'll see. We'll see. I mean, it would be cool, but at the very least, the documentary should be interesting. All right. So Barry Sonnenfeld is a guy who I personally love, even though he's really only made one good movie that I've seen. I mean, he's made some other stuff. Like, I like Wild Wild West, you know? I mean,
some other
things.
You're one of the few.
I do. I like him more than Men in Black. Am I crazy?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, well, that's fine. But he made Get Shorty, and
okay,
that movie like gives him a free pass from now until the end of time. So I'll
fair
see,
enough.
I'll see anything that he does. And he's making a new movie called Perestroika in Paris, which I guess is based on a recent novel.
Okay.
And it's about like it's like talking animals, like a horse is like hanging out in France and somehow
he like a Black Beauty situation?
Loose. I don't know exactly. He gets loose and he starts wandering around Paris and whatever. Mm. It's being produced by Frank Marshall, who's apparently a big fan of horses.
Okay.
He produced Seabiscuit and stuff like that. Mm. But it's going to be 2D animation. Which is
cool. Interesting. If it's animation, that's going to be easier to digest.
Sure.
With, you know, talking horses and stuff. So, okay.
I mean, Sonnenfeld tried the talking animals in live action recently. I think it may have been his last movie. I forget the name of it, but it was the one with where they had like the talking cat, or like you could hear inside the cat's mind, and it was voiced by Kevin Spacey.
Oh gosh,
that didn't age too well.
Nope.
But you know, maybe he'll have better luck with this one.
Okay,
I'll see it no matter what.
All right.
But my hopes are not super high. But
okay.
That's okay.
Fair enough.
It's Frank Marshall, of course, producer of the Bourne movies. Mm-hmm. And the director of most of the Bourne movies is Paul Greengrass.
Oh my God, it's Jason Bourne.
Yes, exactly. I rewatched the third one recently. Mm-hmm. That movie is amazing.
I agree.
Like the 2 and 3 are awesome.
I love the Bourne trilogy.
Yeah. And number 4 and number 5, maybe not so much.
Like I said, I love the Bourne trilogy.
Yes, yes. So Paul Greengrass, who directed 2, 3, and 5, he is making a new political thriller called Night of Camp David, which is based on a novel from the 60s about the story of a junior U.S. senator who comes to the belief that the president is mentally unbalanced and sliding into paranoia as he seeks closer ties to the Soviet Union, believes the media cabal is out to get him, and wants to annex Canada.
Wait, so you said this is a novel from the 60s?
Yes.
Not 2016?
No, but they re-released it in 2018 for some reason. I don't know why.
Interesting.
Yes.
Was the guy that wrote this, was he a disciple of Nostradamus?
He may have been. I don't know.
I mean, like, I can't quite put my finger on it, but there's just something eerily prescient about, you know, that subject matter.
It sounds similar to something like, I don't know, was this what Air Force One was about, or maybe Dave or something? I can't remember.
Maybe, possibly. Maybe. Wag the Dog?
One of those things. Wag the Dog. One of those things. The American President?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But anyway, it sounds cool. Either
okay.
way.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll definitely watch it. You know, Greengrass, he just had that movie News of the World with mm-hmm. Tom Hanks. It's pretty good. I was, you know, I'm not a huge Western fan, mm-hmm. you know, and I was like, I don't know if I watched it just cause I felt like I needed to. And yeah, it was pretty decent. I would recommend it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Universal. They've got like the biggest monster movie stable, right? The biggest mm-hmm. monster stable out of anything. And they had such grand plans with their Dark Universe, right?
Yes.
And it didn't work out too well. And now they're really realizing like, oh, we should just do what we've always done, which is just make weird little monster movies and people will like it.
Yeah.
Invisible Man, for example. Mm-hmm. And that's become the standard. I love that. Not the Mummy, not the big Tom Cruise action extravaganza, but,
yeah.
you know, the
especially because that Mummy can't hold a candle to my man Brendan Fraser's Mummy.
They're about, I hate to break it to you, but they're like pretty much about the same in terms of quality. There's like,
but enjoyability.
Yeah, I don't know about that. It's about the same. Well, they're trying something weird. They're trying something new and different. And they're making a Dracula spinoff movie called Renfield, which is about the guy played by Tom Waits in the Bram Stoker's Dracula, who's in like he's like in the asylum, and everyone thinks he's crazy because he's talking about how like he used to work for Dracula and everything.
Also, he's, like, because he's Tom Waits.
Yeah, right. It was perfect casting. He's like eating bugs off the wall or whatever. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, they're just like, Tom, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just having lunch. Oh, sorry. Yep. Excuse me. I'm just having lunch.
Yeah, Tom Waits is the best. but yeah, that character, he's getting his own movie, and it's going to be set in the modern day, apparently. So not, again, like Krypton, not tied to any specific thing, but in that same, you know, a spinoff of an idea. So I don't know. That sounds cool. Apparently, the original story for this was written by Robert Kirkman.
Okay.
He's not writing the script, but it's going to be directed by Chris McKay, who did Lego Batman and this new movie, The Tomorrow War, which is coming out on Amazon Prime in July.
Is that's Chris Pratt in Tomorrow War?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. There's some good people behind this. So that's what makes this interesting. Kirkman, you know, his, you know, Invincible, still kicking it. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to check that out.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, like, I was at my comic book store the other day, and I almost bought like the first, you know, graphic novel of for Invincible. And then I realized like there's, you know, of all the trades that are available of Invincible, there's like 14 of them. I was like, oh God. Cause again, like I buy so much stuff. This is one of the ones that like was not on my radar. And so I just missed this entire thing. So I'm enjoying not knowing anything about, this and just like kind of learning as I go. But you know, for the collector in me, that's just like, well, I need to probably read these at some point. I was just like, I see this daunting task of, oh crap, there's 14 of these.
Yeah, because didn't he start that before Walking Dead?
Yeah.
That's crazy, yeah. Well, you finish the first season, then you can read, like, you know, first paperback from there. Apparently, they're also doing a live-action movie with Seth Rogen.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So this movie here, this Renfield, I mean, I think it could be okay, right? I mean, Chris McKay, I loved Lego Batman.
Oh yeah. That's, I mean, it's one of the best Batman movies that's come out that we have.
I don't know. At one point he was slated to do a live action Nightwing movie. I mean, it seems like with him doing this, you know, he did another movie and now he's doing this. I'm kind of thinking that Nightwing thing might not be happening anymore, but
no. Well, it's not his fault. It's probably Warner Brothers' fault because everything is.
So, speaking of comic book adaptations, though, Joe Cornish, director of Attack the Block, is adapting Mark Millar's Starlight.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read this comic?
Yeah. Now, see, this is the one that was on my radar because, like, I'm a fan of, you know, Millar and his, you know, Millarverse, especially, you know, Kick-Ass and Hit Girl, like that whole series.
Is the Millarverse like actual? Like, is Starlight in the same continuity as Kick-Ass or not?
No, it's just the Millarverse is just like all of his stuff.
His stuff, yeah,
yeah. Okay. There's some subtle references to certain things, like, you know, like they'll read like a Starlight comic or in one of them, or they'll mention Miracle Man, some of the stuff like that. But like it's not, you know, it's not like the MCU or DCEU or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the Starlight thing?
So it's this, about this guy who was a hero, and he went on these kind of like a Flash Gordon type, I guess. That's kind of a good way to kind of describe it. And he, he's like off in space having these adventures and stuff, but then he comes back, nobody believes that he was a hero or anything. They just kind of think he's kind of, you know, like, whatever, you don't know what you're talking about. And so he settles down, has a wife and kids, and then after that, like, he's called, his spaceship comes back, and he's called to do more adventures, and he leaves to go do that. So that's the premise of it. It's just like this, it's an interesting kind of twist on, you know, the narrative of, because it's not like, you know, he's like, oh, like he was a superhero, he's not getting his credits. Like, oh, they just don't believe him, because in that particular world, it's like, there's no way, like, superheroes aren't real. Like, there's no way that you did any of these things. You're kind of nuts. And they just kind of ignore him.
Yeah, it seems like Millar really likes to kind of, I don't know, twist the genre around and look at it in different interesting ways.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. It sounds good. You know, I like Joe Cornish in general. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll definitely check that out. Okay, another movie, which is coming to Netflix, live action Gundam, mm-hmm. from Jordan Vogt Roberts, the director of Kong Skull Island.
Yeah.
So I mean, Gundam is one of those things which I see the pictures of it and everything, and I'm like, that looks cool, but I've never actually like seen it. I don't know anything about it aside from like giant robots.
Yes.
Do you watch Gundam or any of that
Yeah,
stuff?
Well, see, there's lots of different Gundam series out there. Because it's just a thing that's been around for a very long time. And I'm kind of shocked that like nobody's tried to do a live action thing with Gundam, considering that we've had, you know, Transformers movies, right? And we've also had, you know, Power Rangers for 30 years, right? That there's giant robots in every single, like, there's 900 episodes of, and I'm not kidding, of giant robots fighting, and it's been like that for 30 years. So I'm surprised that we haven't gotten somebody or some studio to greenlight a project where you have movies with giant robots. I mean, look at you know, Pacific Rim, for example. But I'm surprised that nobody's looked at, you know, Gundam and be like, hey, let's do one of these stories. Let's try to do something like this. So I'm curious to see how they will pull this off. Especially considering that like there are examples of, you know, properties with giant robots in them, but they haven't done it like the Gundam way. So I'm looking forward to seeing what a live action Gundam thing will look like.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a tried and true subject, you know, like everybody loves giant robots, so why not? Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, yeah, because giant robots are cool.
Yeah,
that's a constant in this universe.
yep. So here's one which seems super out of nowhere, really weird, but whatever. Paramount Plus is developing an Arlington Road TV show based on the movie, starring Jeff Bridges and Tim Robbins. That was directed by Mark Pellington. And Mark Pellington is coming back to direct the show. Have you seen Arlington Road?
I can't remember if I did or not. If I did, it was like something like I saw like on TV in passing that like my parents were watching and I was just kind of in the room. So I can't remember if I have or not.
It's super weird. I mean, I like it a lot, but the idea is like, Jeff Bridges, you know, is, I don't know if he moves in or like someone else moves in, but he ends up being next door neighbors with Tim Robbins. And he's absolutely 100% convinced. Jeff Bridges is like a professor who like studies like, I don't know, like domestic terrorism or something like that, you know? And he's 100% convinced that Tim Robbins is a terrorist.
Wait,
next door.
Time out. He doesn't fit the description. I'm sorry.
Well, regardless. So he's like absolutely convinced of this, like super paranoid about it. Everybody thinks that he's being super paranoid and that he's wrong and everything. And how could this guy next door, you know, all this stuff. And it just goes from there. I won't tell you, but it's a really good movie, but it's also super crazy.
Okay.
And it's also like, it's not like this was like a huge hit or something like that. It's not like this is like a recent thing. Like, this is a little movie that came out in 1999 that basically nobody saw and just disappeared. And now, 22 years later, they're like, let's make it into a TV show. And I'm on board because I like it. Okay. But at the same time, it's super weird.
Okay, well, well, if that's the case, well, number one, based on the information that you have shared, you said it was a little movie that came out in 1999 that nobody saw. That's likely the reason why they think that, you know, it's like, oh, we can make a movie out of this. Nobody really remembers this. We can kind of do what we want. So that's one reason why they're probably making it. And the other reason is if they stick to what is present in what you have described, it's incredibly prescient that like that's what it is, right? You have somebody, yeah. So these are the times where people want to, and it's, you know, almost expected and necessary to have some of the conversations that something like that will bring up in your art. So I think that's fine. I'm pretty sure the usual suspects will likely not be down with what that is, but I'm here for it at least.
Yeah.
Now I gotta go watch this.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mark Pellington's a super cool director too. I mean, this was his first movie, I think, but he also did The Mothman Prophecies, which is equally weird, just with supernatural elements.
So that I did see.
Yeah. And then he directed some Discovery stuff and everything like that. And he's also, you know, a very prolific music video director, like directing Jeremy for Pearl Jam. You know, that's his big okay. video. So, yeah, really good filmmaker, and I'm curious to see what he does with this. Okay, moving over to the Arrowverse, Legends of Tomorrow. I think they're just about to, or they just started up season 6.
They're about to. It starts in May 2nd.
All right. Well, season 7 has already been greenlit. But apparently they're still negotiating contracts with people. Mm-hmm. And Dominic Purcell, who plays Heatwave, I don't know what's going on exactly with him. But he, I guess, originally posted a thing on Instagram saying, like, I'm coming back. I'll be here through season 7.
Yep.
And then he deleted that and then posted another thing where he's like, I am not coming back. It doesn't matter how much money they're offering me. They couldn't pay me enough to stay on this show. Yeah. And he said like a lot of other stuff was very vague, but also very inflammatory and was just like, okay, that's that.
It's the DC way, man.
But then like a day later, he posts another thing and he's like, guys, I was just kidding. I love everybody on the show, and I'm not coming back as a regular in season 7, but I am coming back for a few episodes. I have a handshake agreement with Phil Klemmer, who's the showrunner. So I don't know what's going on. Who knows how much of that was true or not true or a joke or not a joke, but it seems like he's not going to be a regular in season 7, but he will still be on a few episodes.
All right. Well, Warner Brothers, DC, like, you guys, I have no trust in you, at all at the moment. And, like, I'm only coming back to you out of obligation, you know? And it's just like, I'm running out of things to say about, like, the dysfunction that continues to exist and just wave through the air about everything that goes on over there. It's like every time I turn around, there's something ridiculous going on over there. There's somebody's unhappy or somebody did something bad or, well, you know, there's a new hashtag or somebody got fired for having something, you know, bad, like in his tweets, or, you know, a star of a movie that hasn't really started filming yet choked a fan, or, you know, all these other types of things. Right. And then, so now we got, you know, this, you know, probably one of their best shows because they finally embraced, like, you know, the fact, let's just be weird and have fun, is upset, then he's not upset, and it's just like, y'all, like can we like figure our stuff out, please?
Yeah. I'm only in season 4 right now, but when we do get to season 7, I know that my wife will be very disappointed because that was her favorite character.
Oh, really?
On the show. Maybe in all of the Arrowverse. So, yeah.
I got to say, like, in his rants, he did sound a whole lot like his character.
It's true. That's true. Oh, God. We shall see what happens.
Yeah.
And finally today, Indiana Jones 5 has added yet another cast member, Mads Mikkelsen. Mm-hmm. They just love using like Star Wars actors. It's like just,
of course.
It's just like back in the day, you know, yeah. Like, hey, and that's kind of cool. Obviously, Mads Mikkelsen, he's in a ton of stuff and he's always really good. And mm-hmm. I think the thing that's most exciting about this to me is just that like after decades of them saying like, we're going to make an Indiana Jones 5. Like we're now actually at the point where people are getting hired to act in it. And it's yes. like, okay, so this is going to start like really soon, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that, better.
That's pretty cool. So
yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to Indiana Jones 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't get any worse than 4. So
let's yeah. go. You know, I don't hate 4. I think 4 is okay. But I definitely see his problems.
Okay. What's your favorite Indiana Jones movie?
Well, Raiders. I mean, come on.
Okay.
You know, second favorite. You?
Well, I mean, yeah, duh. Second favorite.
Last Crusade. Although I do love how super crazy and dark Temple of Doom is.
Yeah, that's my second favorite.
Temple of Doom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's the one for the cool kids, right?
I mean, I like to think so.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. And next week we'll be back, but probably a day late so that we can cover all of the Oscar craziness, which will be on Sunday. So until then, have a nice week.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.